Eureka, K-M-U-E, Eureka, K-L-A-I, Laytonville. And we have the Herb Doctors.
Welcome to Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray.
For those of you who perhaps have never listened to the show, they run every third Friday of the month from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. And from 7:30 to the end of the show at 8 o'clock, callers are invited to call in with questions either related to the monthly topic or if they are alternative questions for Dr. Pete. That's also part and parcel of opening up the lines. I really like to keep the questions on the topic if we can, but let's see where we go with this. So it's 2021. We are very happy to join again and to do the first show of this year. And I want to start first by introducing Dr. Raymond Pete. Dr. Raymond Pete, you with us?
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your time again in this next year. For those people that perhaps have never heard too much about you, as does happen, would you outline your academic and professional background before I begin this evening?
After college, I spent several years studying and teaching linguistics and literature and painting, and then 1968, I decided to go to graduate school in biology for a PhD, did my dissertation in 1972 on reproductive hormones and aging and the oxidative metabolism changes with aging have been one of my main themes ever since.
Okay. You've been actively involved in research surrounding especially things like progesterone and, like you say, aging and the process by which cellular breakdown occurs and aging proceeds. And I know you spent the better part of 40 years researching and producing a lot of reference articles. We'll give out the information right now. We'll do it at the end of the show, too. But for people that are listening, Dr. Pete's website is www.raypeat.com. So people should go there, take a look at his articles. You will find them very informative. So I was going to go in a certain direction, and Dr. P, you're not aware of this because I haven't mentioned it to you, but we're going to go in a certain direction this evening with some of the results of this last 12 months. The last 12 months have seen this viral pandemic move across the globe and all of the repercussions, of which they're numerous, from financial, economic effects, social effects, et cetera, most anything you can think about has been directly impacted. And the financial effect of this is something else that I just want to bring out as a subject for people to sit and think about. I couldn't hardly believe what was happening up until a point. And most people who are listening, if they've listened to the show before, they'll know that Sarah and I were both qualified naturopaths. We've got a degree in England in alternative medicine and herbal medicine, and we're members of the European professional body, the MCPP, as well as the National Institute of Medical Herbalists. So I spent the better part of 22 years as an active practitioner of herbal medicine. California does give us that right as well, which is actually quite significant because there's not, I don't think, too many other states that have actually ratified the ability to practice like California has, which is, you know, certainly a very inclusive state. Now, the other thing I wanted to say as a preface to what I want to question you about a little bit later, Dr. Pete, is that the pandemic has resulted in many, many things, and one of which is the vaccine. And what I wanted, I was going to ask you some questions surrounding this, but let me first tell you this. I'm an unabashed Christian. I have no fear in saying that. And I freely will express my opinions when people ask, and I'm delighted to let people know more if they ask questions, and I don't certainly push it on anybody. But what is very interesting is that you have to remember, and this is to the people that are listening, you have to remember that we live in a spirit world. It's not a physical, it's not purely physical world we live in. And the spirit world is very active, and from a biblical perspective, we recognize the eternal, although it will have a final time, the battle between good and evil, and why we have the inherent corruption in our world system. And banking is one of those main areas in which power and corruption is principally held, and people suffer as a result of any kind of corruption. So what I wanted to bring out was the, in a roundabout kind of way, but I want you to do your own research, folks, and see what I'm saying is not just speculation or conspiracy. Dr. Pete, you're backed up with plenty of science, and most people who listen to the show know that we're not conspiracists and we're not alarmists, but that we have science to prove what we're saying. Now, we've mentioned Bill Gates' ID 2020 program. We've mentioned all the workings of the last 40 or 50 years of industrialization, and the culmination of which, not from a conspiracy point of view, but just think about the timeline and think about the end results. This global pandemic, which you have said for many, many months, is really not justified in the science, but which seems to have a very unweighted impact of deaths versus causation, and comparable to regular deaths happening around the world. But that fear of this disease, this influenza, has gripped the nation, and the leaders of each nation are gripping the residents of each country, the citizens of each country, into a state where lockdowns and authoritarianism has become very, very prominent. And the system under which we're living now, it's probably never been so authoritative than it is at this point. Maybe since, some of the draconian takeovers of people like Mao or Stalin. So, Dr. Peter, I just want to mention this as a paragraph, just to get people thinking about the impact of what we're going through here and what we still have to go through. That think about this sentence, and you can look at it yourself and work it out. The implantable quantum dot microneedle vaccination delivery system. Okay?
Repeat that, would you?
So, to repeat it again. Implantable quantum dot microneedle vaccination delivery system. Now, in alphanumerics, A is 1, Z is 26, so every letter of the alphabet has a number. If you add up the numbers of that, what I just said, implantable quantum dot microneedle vaccination delivery system, which is the way that a luciferase bearing, and we'll get into that, vaccination for COVID, which is being patented by Bill Gates, the number adds up to 666. And I want you to think from a spiritual perspective, rather than a physical perspective, because we do live in a spiritual world, that this is another way that we get told signs from God, as far as I'm concerned, that clearly show events. And I think, I know it's not a religious show we do, but I just thought it was quite fantastic that this, nothing happens by coincidence. I thought it was quite fantastic that this method that's been patented by Bill Gates to deliver COVID vaccination to every member of the planet, if he can get away with it, adds up to 666. And he's also patented a human implantable device for buying and selling cryptocurrency with a patent number of 060606. You can't make this stuff up, folks. This is real. Go look at it. It's not conspiracy. I'm not a nut job. Dr. Pete's got lots of evidence and science supporting what he says, and most people that see it for what it is. You know, if you're looking at a duck and it looks like a duck, it probably is a duck. So the perspective that we live in this spirit world and that this technology, luciferase technology, which allows a phosphorylation, a glow, a visible light to be readable, that this vaccination technology is going to give this, if people who accept this vaccination through this technology, a very visible mark, and that the whole vaccine passport is tied into this very thing that will allow people to move about and to work, and ultimately with the currency being reduced to cryptocurrency or digital currency with the abolition of paper currency, fiat currency, that this whole thing, as we've said, certainly seems to be some kind of a takedown of our what we understood as the normal banking world that we live in, the day-to-day, and how things have been done, is about to be taken over. And I don't want to underestimate that. But
I think conspiracies are very important in this whole thing. People who are interested in the effect of conspiracies on history should investigate the fact that the foundations, Bill Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, World Economic Forum, were predicting in great detail of more than a year before, as far back as 10 years previously, but they were going into specific detail a year before there was any hint of a pandemic in 2019. They were detailing the need to destroy the present economy of lots of small and medium-sized businesses. They called that the legacy economy, the economy to be put entirely to rest, to allow a digital economy run by artificial intelligence to take over. They had to destroy the existing economies of the world, especially the United States, so that they could make headway against China, was the argument. But the thing of replacing the real economy with a digital economy that doesn't exist, that was a real conspiracy. It has caused horrible destruction, people losing their whole careers and livelihoods. And as a result, already in the first year, the billionaires have profited with tens, hundreds of billions of dollars advance in their wealth. For example, Amazon, just as predicted by the conspirators in 2019, Amazon has become practically a necessity for many people to do their shopping. Eric Schmidt said it would be the aesthetically satisfying way to do your shopping, but we have no choice, really, when they destroy the businesses and prevent people from going to them. The reason they're making hundreds of billions of dollars is that there's no alternative. So it's like a conspiracy to do the biggest robbery in history by about a million times. And the stories about people making up conspiratorial explanations, you don't have to do any real investigation. You can find out what they were writing. The World Economic Forum, the Rockefeller Foundation, and Eric Schwab in particular were great predictors because it was a conspiracy.
Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Carverville 91.1 FM. From 7:30 till the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in the questions about the ongoing situation with COVID and vaccination and the science behind it. The number, if you are wanting to call in, is 707-923-3911. So, Dr. P, I was kind of staggered to see that the patents that have been pulled out by the Microsoft Corporation, of which apparently Bill Gates has distanced himself from, but obviously we know that's not exactly the truth, but they've already written extensive patents, not just for drugs and vaccines, but extensive patents for this particular type of implantable quantum dot microneedle vaccination delivery system, which adds up to 666, a mark of the beast, the number of man, and that they've also produced a patent for this implantable device for buying and selling cryptocurrency. And the patent number, again, is 060606. I mean, I don't know who decides patent numbers, but everything, as far as I'm concerned, that we've seen and witnessed in the last 12 months has been right in your face. It's not been hidden. I don't believe any of it's really been hidden. And I think that is part and parcel of the spirit world that we operate in, is that actually most people are just not looking. But you know what? I think it's all designed to be right in your face, just like some of the statements that are put out for certain things to make people decide one way or another way which way they're going to decide to go.
I haven't seen any statement put out by the government regarding either the vaccine or the pandemic, which is true. And no one has brought forth a true statement to challenge that idea. If they had a real vaccine and a method of delivering a viral RNA doesn't meet any of the definitions stated by the government describing a vaccine, by the government's own definition of vaccines, delivery of viral RNA doesn't meet their definition. But if they did have a vaccine, intradermal delivery would be the only biological basis for using a vaccine to create immunity. For example, the smallpox vaccine was given intradermally for thousands of years, and finally, when the World Health Organization decided to do it, it was used to eliminate the disease in a very short time. I think it was something like a year and a half it took to surround the vaccine the virus outbreaks and vaccinate the people exposed in a tighter and tighter circle until the disease no longer existed. That was done by intradermal introduction of antigens. That meets the definition of vaccine, but it's the only time the government has used a vaccine intelligently. After proving that you could encircle a disease outbreak and bring the whole disease to an end, that wasn't economically interesting to any of the drug companies. Terminating a disease, finally, they might get 5 years or 10 years of vaccine sales, but you don't want to end your market for a product. So they have totally directed the whole vaccination culture away from using it logically to eliminate that disease from the world. And the intradermal vaccination approaches the immune system in one of the three ways that we normally encounter a disease: by inhalation, by swallowing it, or by having it rubbed into the skin, getting the infectious material on your skin, and then having a break in the skin of some sort. Those activate a many-leveled immune process. And the people who are effectively immune don't necessarily have antibodies showing that immunity, because every biological function is part of our resistance to disease. When the organism is desperately lacking in energy, it will resort to producing antibodies, because once you produce antibodies against a particular disease, you're opening the way to create autoimmunity, because the vaccine, the antibody is recognizing a combination of your own tissue and the infectious antigen. And if you continue to have lower biological energy, such as under the influence of estrogen rather than progesterone, estrogen profoundly increases the odds of having an autoimmune disease, because it pushes white blood cells to produce antibodies, the only part of the naturally immune system is the antibody, which is activated by estrogen, but not by all of the things that really count in resisting infection.
I want to say, so basically you were saying about the vaccine that if they were delivering viral particles in a vaccine that was scraped into the skin, like the first successful vaccine that we know of, the smallpox vaccine, that would be a much safer, more logical approach to curing people, or not even cure, preventing.
COVID involves the thymus cells and many other types of cell along the way, and those can take care of exposure to infectious particles without needing to activate the B cell antibody production, that type which is activated by estrogen or extreme deprivation of energy, so that you can induce antibodies in a very sick old person, for example, and you haven't necessarily done anything for the real immune system, the innate immunity that starts with your skin or bowel or respiratory membranes.
So, Dr. P, I wanted to let's move on. Let's move on from that that paragraph that you've last said here about the vaccine that's been produced. Well, the many vaccines that have been produced. Let's just talk about one of the vaccines here that's known to contain fetal cells. Now, obviously, again, it plays into abortion and the origin of these cells in the first place to do this with, which is a very emotive subject for a lot of people, and that this is part and parcel of turning, I won't say ignoring science, but it seems like a very very sacrosanct thing to come to pass, that they are using aborted fetuses and the cells within them to be part and parcel of the machinery to derive a quote-unquote sufficient response.
Any living cell, human or otherwise, can be infected without the without producing any symptoms. It can be infected with dozens or hundreds of viruses. So if you use monkey cells at any point of the process of making a vaccine, you could be introducing a monkey virus. And the polio vaccine that it infected millions with a cancer-producing simian virus 40, that wasn't known until someone discovered it, because they didn't think of looking for it. If you don't look for an infection or a virus particle in your vaccine, you aren't going to find it. But you would have to do the PCR test for thousands of potential diseases to know that the vaccine was not going to give you a simian virus 40, for example.
So moving on then to the technology, let's talk a little bit about that. Again, it's another apt name for what seems to be a mark of the beast type man created, and unfortunately man does a lot of things that are very counterproductive as well as things that he does that are creative and productive. But luciferase is the name of the enzyme, so kind of, again, it's just almost too difficult to believe, but Lucifer being the prototype of light from the Bible, the early discussions of Lucifer being cast down as a lord of light. The technology that they're using, not wanting to use, they've already done it, but would you like to comment on the technology of luciferase and its application and any of its negative results, or how it's going to lead us into a certain direction that science is championing?
If they're using it with a patch technology to put it into the skin intradermally, that's one tremendous virtue, because anything you inject, antibiotic or vitamin or vaccine, whatever, creates an exposure that the organism never knew in any significant quantity until the the hypodermic needle was invented and then monopolized by doctors, who then began saying that taking your traditional oral or transdermal or whatever botanical remedy was primitive and ineffective, and that any active drug had to be injected either intravenously or intramuscularly. So that's a whole culture that was invented as a way to take over and monopolize the whole system of medicine, suppressing the traditional methods. In the process, intramuscular introduction of all kinds of dirt and junk and antigens became common. paralytic polio wasn't known until right after the introduction of hypodermic needles. And the following up on the paralytic aspect of what had been a gastrointestinal diarrhea-producing virus, they found that breakouts of paralytic polio coincided remarkably with the campaigns to vaccinate for basically anything or even things unrelated to polio, but simply simply injecting intramuscularly a large population in an area. If a person developed polio, it was usually in the arm or leg where they received the intramuscular injection. And animal studies showed that regardless of the real infection, the paralysis consistently appeared most often in the arm or in the front or left or right leg or the rear left or right leg, whichever was the site of intramuscular injection. So the whole scheme of intramuscular vaccination has danger built into it. Shifting to a patch would probably reduce the death rate from all sorts of related virus-related or apparently unrelated causes. Luciferin protein is sort of a devilish, extraneous a matter. It's something entirely separate from the biological involvement of the immune system and vaccine and so on. And it's just entertainment for the World Health Center or the CDC, making it easier for them to track people.
Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMED Garbago 91.1 FM. The lines are open now, and you're invited to call. The number is 707-923-3911. Once again, 707-923-3911. Dr. Raymond Peake with us, discussing the ongoing pandemic and some pros and cons of things that have come out of it. I don't know too many pros, but obviously we've talked at length about very innocuous substances that have been shown to be very effective in combating inflammation, which is the main hallmark of any severe COVID-related difficulty, respiratory difficulty. I mean, we can quickly go over them, but I want to carry on looking at vaccine manufacture and the end result of this, which, you know, I think anybody with children can attest to the massive numbers now of vaccinations that children are quote-unquote required to have, not advised, but required, and in some instances cannot attend school without, for example, gone from maybe a handful, one or two or three maybe, in the late 60s, early 70s, perhaps even later, but up to about 50-something now in multiple rounds. And I know that you'd mentioned let's talk about now. I mean, some of these things that are in vaccines, we've already mentioned fetal cells, which really raises a very ethical question about the source of these cells and why on earth we're injecting them into our body, followed by things like polyethylene glycol, used in the vaccine, and this was also it's been associated with idiopathic thrombocytopenia, which several people in the news recently have died as a result. I'm not saying that everybody who receives this vaccine is going to die, but it's only been out a very short space of time, and there's already at least a half a dozen cases that have been reported on, and I'm sure a lot more that have not been reported on, because...
And as Pfizer immediately said that there is no known connection between vaccination and that particular killing of the platelet system. Several people have pointed out that the government has that as one of their categories for compensating vaccination damage, and it has been something between 1 in 25,000 vaccinations and 1 in 40,000 vaccinations with the measles, mumps, what is the third one?
Rubella.
Yeah.
And we have a caller.
Okay, well, let's hold that thought there for a minute, Dr. Pete, but let's just, we'll circle back to it after this question, relating it to the lack of free speech, apparently, at this point in time, and reporting of
free
adverse
speech,
effects.
Yes, because I know it doesn't sound scientific, but I do believe it is. Love is the vaccine that we're looking for here. You know, it's biological. Mm. It's at the root.
Do you have a question for Dr. Pete?
I couldn't hear it.
Well, I don't know if she's asked the question yet. Do you have a question, caller?
No, I'm having a statement.
All right, thanks for your time. Okay, so Dr. Pete, to get back to the subject of the increasingly chilling effect of cracking down on free speech in terms of the ability and the right for free speech, First Amendment right, folks, that reporting of these adverse events, I wonder that we would hear as much as we would if there was a free access to this information, because, again, the Internet is rapidly becoming a very directed tool. And if you don't think that that's happening right now, then think again, folks, because if you haven't already noticed, just your regular browsing and searching for things is being channeled and funneled into a specific direction. If you want to try and find information about certain things, you just don't find it anymore. And I know Dr. P will bring this up very quickly before we carry on, but you mentioned that when you were studying, you physically went to the university libraries, and you dug through volumes stored in the basement in order to get access to some files that were abstracts on clinical trials, etc. And that actually, as time went on, it was harder and harder to retrieve these, and the only volumes or tomes that you'd find in the library were the things written by companies that wanted you to find this information, because it was almost a pay-to-play.
Books that I read in the 1950s by 1965 had disappeared. And in the, I think it was 1980s when they started using computer databases, the old outgoing science librarian was... installing the various ways to access those databases, and she asked me to check how reliable the computers were, and I had been looking at the print version of biological and chemical abstracts, and I gave her several specific references to articles that I found on the paper version, and she couldn't find them on any of the computerized databases. As soon as biological abstracts went onto the digital system, someone was improving it by deleting controversial subjects.
And that was back when?
In the 1980s, I think it was.
Right. Well, I want to
Let me just say this. You're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMED Garberville 91.1 FM. From now until the end of the show, you're invited to call in with questions about this month's subject. The number is 707-923-3911. Dr. Raymond Peake, guest speaker.
In the 1990s, I went back to the library and asked what had happened to the tier on tier of volumes of biological abstracts and chemical abstracts filled a large part of the science library, and they said they had been put into storage, and I said, so can I have access to some particular year's volumes? And they said, no, they're in unlabeled boxes. Essentially, functionally, they had burned a large part of the science library.
Unbelievable. But, I mean, seeing what we're seeing now, I guess it was just, you know,
it's an electronic form of it.
And it's probably been happening for thousands of years in varying degrees and at varying times. I just want to reference what the last caller called in to make a statement about, and we totally believe love is all important everywhere and all the time. I also want to mention that in 2005, Anthony Fauci promoted hydroxychloroquine as a cure to COVID. And now you don't hear about very many cures for COVID like Losartan, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, not to mention all the herbs that are very, very effective at treating flu, coronavirus flus, and other flus. But it's just incredible how the narrative they give you is what they want to give you. Even the same person who did research that chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread in 2005, he doesn't want to talk about it now. And in fact, he didn't even want to talk about it.
I think it was in May of last year that two of the most prestigious medical journals, Lancet was the most shocking. Just after Trump had mentioned that he was recommending hydroxychloroquine for treating the virus, both these journals rushed to print an article that had just been produced basing their study on a database of supposedly 95,000 cases being a definitive and final study supposedly showing that using hydroxychloroquine tremendously increased the death rate from the virus. And when someone said, could we have information about this miraculous new database, they found that the company that supposedly created it was two or three people that had nothing to do with biological research.
I remember that article.
It turned out that the whole 95,000 cases were made up out of thin air. And
how long did it take the Lancet to retract?
People started pointing it out, the editor-in-chief said it's not my business to make sure an article is true.
We have a caller, actually, Dr. Peter. Hold that thought there, and let's take this next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
Hi, I'm from Arizona, and my question is about childhood illnesses. When I was 5 or 6 years old, I had a very mild case of the chicken pox. My parents counted 12 pox. And some children had very severe cases of the chicken pox, but now all children, or not all, but the vast majority of children are vaccinated. And I was wondering if society is actually harmed by not allowing children to have mild diseases like the chicken pox.
There's evidence that they are more likely to have cancer, for example, if they don't get chicken pox.
Wow, a link to cancer without chicken pox.
And now,
can you elaborate on that?
Older people are marketed the shingles vaccine.
Sure.
And I guess it only works for about 5 years before it wears off.
Dr. Pete, how about reactivated chickenpox and shingles in terms of what the caller said about the vaccine not lasting too long? But
if you keep your body, your whole body is your immune system. If you keep it healthy with, for example, adequate vitamin D and calcium, and keeping all of your hormones away from the stress axis, you aren't going to have those reactivations.
Nicola, do you have any other questions?
Yeah, lastly, on an old show, Dr. Pete, you mentioned a study that was done in Central America with three villages, and one village was fully vaccinated, another village was control, and the third village got clean water and a nutritional supplement. Is that, do you remember when that was done and who did it?
That particular, it was a whole series of studies over, I guess, 5 or 10 years. That particular article was in Nutrition Reviews. I read it in the late 1970s.
Is that when it was published, in the late 1970s?
Yeah, I think so.
Wasn't it a research study put out by the World Health Organization?
It was an organization promoted, organized under the World Health Organization.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
I have a question.
Thank you for your call.
I have a question related kind of to diet and nutrition and COVID and immune health in general. What do you think about artificial sweeteners, and specifically, what about xylitol?
Dr. Pete, xylitol as an artificial sweetener?
Anything that interferes with your energy production, especially oxidative energy using glucose, anything that biases against that kind of energy is going to impair your immune reactions.
So you think xylitol could be potentially immunosuppressive?
The artificial sweeteners, I think some of them have been.
Okay. I do know with xylitol, there's been lots of published research to support its use in preventing dental caries. I have tried it on my children. And they do have, as like a tooth gel, xylitol tooth gel or xylitol tooth powder. And I have noticed, just in case listeners are interested, that they report a stomach ache if they swallow any of the tooth gel or tooth powder. Dr. Pete, can you explain that with xylitol?
I think it's from an interference with energy production properly from glucose.
Okay, and Michael, did you have any other questions about diet related to immunity?
No. I mean, I know there's a lot of different types of fake sweetener, and xylitol is kind of an alcohol, whereas NutraSweet is a crazy protein and stuff, and just it's found hidden everywhere and we're not the healthiest society, and I kind of wonder sometimes what's lurking in common industrial food.
Exactly. Well, you and I know, Michael, that honey is, you know, nature's finest sweetener.
Although there's a lot of honey contamination and pollution, too. I mean, honey's a whole interesting one, too.
I guess if
you have your own hive and you're in a balanced ecosystem, but that's another show we'll do together sometime on my show.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Okay, so Dr. Pete, how about speaking to what has been reported here that a British medical journal editor has looked at a very tiny amount of data released by Pfizer, and again, this is all about free reporting and free access to information rather than the channeling of only one type of information that prevents a free discourse and neutrality, because both sides can be heard, that the vaccine is between 19 and 29% effective and not the 90%+ effectivity, you know, efficacy rates that they want to tell us that the vaccine is capable of.
And Pfizer released that microscopic amount of data, which still gave away some of their secrets. They released it in the most favorable, cheerleading sort of way, I think, was the New England Journal of Medicine, that the editor, who had no special knowledge about viruses or vaccines, wrote an editorial praising it as just the greatest result in medicine, and things that the Pfizer author said were talking around the actual data, which they're hiding. The vast bulk of their data is secret. So the public has been trained to accept authority instead of science. People think they're listening to science when they are hearing very biased owner of a product say what they say is science, but it's nothing but authoritarian pronouncements.
So if
you don't let out the data that your statements are based on, they should be considered religious or philosophical opinion.
Right.
Absolutely nothing to do with science.
Yeah, well, hence, very briefly, the separation of church and state. So very, very briefly, just the thought of vaccine passports as a control mechanism. I mean, I'm not too sure what is going on. Well, I do know. I am completely sure. I'm very aware of what's going on here, but it just, to most people listening, I will sound completely conspiratorial, but sometimes those conspiracies are so embedded in the truth that they just seem completely unbelievable because they're so fantastic in their scope. But in terms of this pandemic and the small numbers of people that have died, and the greatest majority of people are just getting over it. Some of them with hardly any symptoms. A lot of people showing positive with no symptoms. A very, very small minority, unfortunately, of older or diseased individuals dying, but the numbers still seem to be pretty low.
The average age of people dying from supposedly COVID is very nearly exactly the same as the total average age of total death, which would mean that the virus has essentially nothing to do with the age of death.
So for those people who will hear this show perhaps at some point or who are listening to it now, regardless of the amount of fear you might be under and the science that's showing you the numbers and how these numbers have been manipulated and the massive, massive financial and economic stress and calamity it's produced, and we're apparently just at the beginning of this next phase, folks, wake up. A vaccine passport before you can move around and do business. That really sounds to me like the final nail in the coffin.
That's what they hope it is. I think if more people just look at the questioning articles, there's a good article by Genevieve Briand of Johns Hopkins University. Her article was censored as soon as the authorities noticed it. And then there's another good article, censorship of Genevieve Briand.
And we have one more caller who's going to have to be super brief.
We don't have time, I'm afraid.
Oh, well. Okay.
Let me just thank you very much, Dr. Pete.
Okay.
So I just want to round up the end of the show by just making it very obvious that if you don't already recognize the fact that the Constitution and the amendments that we had protecting free speech and right to assembly, et cetera, are rapidly eroding, and we're going to see some rapidly accelerating desecration here. I want to give out the fact that there is still plenty of hope, because for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear, truth is very self-evident, and I think you can only see the coming wrath of domination and authoritarianism. Beware. It's happened many times throughout history, and I think this is no exception. But at this point in time, we are World Wide Web connected, so I think everybody has had the opportunity to see it and hear it and collectively feel what's going on. There are plenty of alternatives, as we've always mentioned, to any complications of COVID even. And what is being pushed on us, I don't think at all, is a very fair and scientifically relevant end game. But anyway, it's the first show of this year, 2021. We'll see what 2021 brings. I wish those people who are listening a happy new year. Until February, although the February show may be cancelled, I've still yet to confirm dates going forward. But if we're not on the air in February, I don't think we've been pulled off by the powers that be, but we're just simply not doing it. Should be back in March if we don't do this again in February. So thanks very much for listening. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Murray. And one to end the show on a positive note, the day length is getting longer and we are heading to spring.
Yeah, we sure are.
Thank you for listening. Have a good night.
Thank you. Good night.
And it's 7:59. This is Redwood Community Radio, KMUD Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KLAI Laytonville. And sorry, we can't take any callers. And if you call in at the very end and you want to talk to me, I'm not going to talk to you. And if you call me again and again and harass me, I, as an engineer, will never put you on the air again. I promise. I swear to God, I recognize your voice. Have a lovely evening.